Well, just to reiterate what Rosie said, I'd like to thank everyone, you know, all those who helped organize all this. It's always nice to be able to come out and talk about these issues. And unlike OSHA, NIOSH didn't get the memo about not talking about immigrants explicitly, so I'm going to. basically, what I want to do with this talk, it has the first third of it is going to be geared more towards folks who haven't worked a lot with immigrant communities. I know many of you have, but it's basically talking about our experience of working with and considerations when you're looking at approaching the immigrant community and doing either research or interventions with them. And then the second one, we'll talk specifically about some of NIOSH's projects with the Mexican consulates. How do I? Okay. I have a disclosure and a disclaimer. basically, it says that while I'm working for NIOSH, what I'm saying here doesn't necessarily represent official NIOSH policy, and I have no financial relationship to the studies I've been doing here. So as I mentioned, the first objective is going to be talking a little bit about basically some considerations when you're approaching the immigrant community. And these really go for just about any community you're working with. But one is to recognize, first and foremost, that the Latino immigrant community is a very diverse community. You have, you know, from differences in nationalities, differences in ethnicities, racial differences, class differences, et cetera. They're very complex societies. And so I think oftentimes in the United States they're seen as monolithic, but that's not the case. And so it's very important to realize that within those societies there are obviously individuals and organizations that have different interests and perspectives and whatnot. And so as you're going to these groups, it's important to get a lay of the land, so to speak, and not just cling on to the first person that says, yes, they want to work with you. Second, Latino is not necessarily a synonym for immigrant. I mean, there are organizations out there and individuals out there who have been here for many years and whose focus may be serving the Latino, the U.S.-born Latino or established communities, and not so much the immigrant communities. And so sometimes that gets confused by folks as well. So if you're focusing on immigrants, you obviously want to head towards groups that focus on immigrants. Another distinction we find useful to make is that immigrant serving is not always immigrant-based. So there are many organizations that do wonderful work, you know, serving the immigrant community and providing services they provide to everyone in Spanish as well or in another language and helping immigrants access those services. But that's very different than community-based organizations or grassroots organizations that are immigrant-controlled and immigrant-based and in the immigrant community. And neither one is right or wrong, but you just have to be able to determine, well, what are you looking to get out of the relationship with that organization so you can determine which is the best fit for your needs. And then, of course, it's very important to realize that there are also informal leaders and informal structures within the community. You know, they don't always organize themselves as nonprofits, but there are clearly, whether it's hometown associations or just the first person to have arrived from a certain town, there are many informal, or the local store, there are many informal ways that the community organizes itself. And at times it's very advantageous if you can, I mean, it's difficult to do, but it's advantageous that if you can, get plugged into some of those structures as well. Because they have an ability to really, in some way, set the agenda for the community. They're the opinion leaders in many ways within the community. So as I mentioned, there are different types of organizations. First was I was talking about these grassroots community-based organizations. They're often less formal, often not registered as nonprofit organizations or legal entities. We've used them a lot for data collection. We often train up members of the organizations to kind of help us go out and do data collection. We also involve them in really all aspects of the study, the community-based research. These are the real groups we find are very helpful to get plugged into when you're doing the community-based research. And also that if you're actually promoting something, to get community buy-in for the programs or campaigns that you're doing. Second, the immigrant serving organizations. These are good places to find large number of immigrants. Generally, the difference, if I can speak broadly here, is that the grassroots community organizations are ones that are used to kind of going out into the community, where the immigrant serving organizations tend to be there and immigrants tend to come to them. And so it's a good place to find a lot of people sitting in waiting rooms or coming or to host an event there, a meeting, because immigrants are used to showing up there. They tend to feel comfortable at those places. They're also very good to get referrals from, so maybe they do services on I don't know, signing folks up for legal aid, and then you can get them to refer you to, if they have occupational questions or concerns, to get them referred to you. And they're also, you know, another immigrant serving organization would be like a local media. You know, so there are a lot of small newspapers, radio shows, et cetera, that you can plug into as well to promote campaigns and messages and interventions. And then, of course, there are the large institutions. You know, there are those that are serving the immigrant community, like some of the federal institutions that, you know, add on to what their mission is already to help and reach out to this community. And then there are others that focus primarily on this, like the Mexican government or the any of the other governments with their consulate system. And, of course, there's the national, you know, Spanish language media as well. So I alluded to this a little bit earlier, but choosing a partner. One, I think it's very important is as you're approaching a community or trying to do an intervention or research in a community, that you avoid, you know, using the community. You just don't go in there, grab your data, and leave and forget it. And I think that's pretty much standard practice and ethics these days. But I think because of the complexity of the community, there's a real need to really commit to the community you're looking at working with. You know, be there for the long term, and as time goes on, you're going to learn a lot about it that you didn't see at first glance. Do your homework before you go in. Get to know the community and the institutions before committing. So don't just show up to the first person who says they work with immigrants and then offer them a contract and say, okay, well, let's go. You know, you want to kind of get to do your homework, get information from a variety of sources, kind of get the lay of the land and understand, well, where do these class divides or national divides or whatnot play out in the community? And if I go with this person, am I automatically going to be seen as representing the Salvadoran community and ignoring the Mexicans or vice versa? So it's very important to really understand, well, what organizations are out there, who do they represent, who are their constituents, and what does it mean working with them, you know? Also, it's very important to understand the reality faced by the community. One thing we found in the data is that many times people are very interested in promoting the rights of immigrants, and so, which is obviously not a bad thing. But without really understanding particularly the complications that undocumented status raises, you know, we've had cases where groups will go out there and tell people, look, if you're injured on the job, it's your right to workers' comp, tell the doctor that it happened at work and file a complaint. And so you get a worker who does that, who happens to be undocumented, and he says, look, everything went through fine until my boss got the letter. And he wasn't balking at you know, giving me the workers' comp. The problem is that when I went to the doctor, I used my real name, and my employer has a false name, and so now I'm fired, right? And so while this was, he was completely within his rights to be getting signed up for workers' comp, the organization who promoted this was unaware of some of the intricacies and problems that people, the complications people face, and it ended up being a lot worse for him. And so it's very important that as we begin to do particular campaigns in these communities, that we really understand the complexity of the situation they're facing, because their reality oftentimes is complicated or very different than the average, you know, reality of a U.S.-born worker. And then, you know, one way to do this is just do your research, do the focus groups, do the stuff out in the community, get to know them, and also be educated by experts or people who have been working in that community in a variety of different fields, or the immigrant, you know, immigrant leaders themselves. And like I said before, know what you're looking for in a partner. You know, what is the role you're looking for, right? Different organizations have different strengths. If you're looking to hold a meeting, well, then go to one of these immigrant-serving organizations that people are accustomed to coming to. You know, if you're looking at trying to do outreach or trying to get, you know, run surveys or data collection in the community, well, maybe a community-based or a community activist organization would be much better, because they have, you know, the practice of moving out and reaching out to the community. And I think the overriding, you know, important thing is to be humble. You know, even if you do all of these things and they're not magic, you know, you're obviously going to learn a lot as time goes on. And so just be aware of don't latch on to that first group or those first people. Be open and willing to learn more and more about the community. As you do more and more work there, you'll understand it better and be willing to adapt and change if need be. Okay, so the second basic objective is to talk a little bit about the work NIOSH has been doing with the Mexican consulates. For those that are unfamiliar, consulates are basically just satellite offices of any government in any country, right? So you have the embassy in Washington, and then, you know, there are consulates all over the place. Mexico is not the only country that has them, but they're the ones that have the most consulates throughout the United States. The, They have 50 consulates in the United States. That doesn't mean they have one in each state. They have numerous in California and Texas, and there are some states where they don't have any presence at all. But they have covered the entire territory of the United States. So some consulates are responsible for counties, and others are responsible for, you know, 5 or 6 states. And they serve over 1 million Mexican nationals annually. Most of the time people are coming, they offer many, many services there, but most of the people come to the consulates to get what they call a national ID card, or the matricula, or a passport. So they have some sense of, so some identification that identifies them as Mexican citizens. Using this network, the Mexican government has been very active, probably the most active country out there, in actually trying to utilize this network to promote the well-being of their communities. And so they do everything from education to cultural events, et cetera. The one thing that, as Rosie mentioned there, the ventanillas de salud, or the health windows. And the health windows basically provide information on health-related issues to people who are sitting there waiting for their passports or their ID cards to get processed. They help people identify whether they're actually entitled or their children are entitled to medical or to like Medicaid and government benefit programs. And they help them fill out the forms and get registered for that if they're eligible. And then they also do health fairs where they'll do basic cholesterol screenings or, you know, very basic health screenings for folks on occasion. There are over 40 ventanillas de salud throughout the country and growing. I think there were just 2 years ago, there were only 20 of them. So they're really behind this in a large way. And the actual ventanillas serve roughly well over 100,000 people annually. The other thing to know about the ventanillas is that they're very diverse. And so while the Mexican government provides some funding for them, the way they work is they actually partner with a local nonprofit organization or county government. And that entity, that's the fiscal agent, and they try and get grants and whatnot to sponsor the work. So in some of the consulates, all you have is a TV screen, a closed circuit TV screen that plays messages and maybe a table full of brochures. And other ones you have that, and then you have folks coming in occasionally from different nonprofits on different topics to talk about, you know, whatever the mission of their agency is to people in the waiting room. Others, you actually have a full-time employee that sits there and answers questions for folks as they come in around health-related issues. And so it's rather diverse. And then some of the other services that the protection department, or that the councils provide, they have a protection department, which I know OSHA has been working with a lot. It's basically a set of lawyers in the Mexican consulate that provides referrals and advice to folks with different problems. And of course, they're connected to many organizations and institutions, just being the Mexican government in that local area, so they have a strong referral network. So what are some of the things NIOSH is collaborating with the consulates in terms of trying to promote occupational safety and health in the population? One, epidemiological surveillance. So while there's data on fatality rates, you know, injury rates, illness rates, and treatment, et cetera, there's very little data on immigrant workers and how they're accessing these things. So there's several studies that we've been doing in conjunction, or that the council's been doing, and then we've been kind of adding items as they let us. First is the Center for Immigrant Health in New York City. They did a general survey several years ago, where it's just a general health survey to kind of get a pulse of what the Mexican community is going through. They asked us, and we included 4 or 5 items on that survey around occupational health. I think they've done like 700 interviews at their surveys at this point. Then out of that, they created an occupational health, a survey exclusively about occupational health to do in the New York consulate, and I think they've done about 300 of those at this point. So from that, we really focused on that, not so much on all of the symptoms and problems that they have, but just asking people open-ended questions like, have you had a problem at work? And if you have, what have you done about it? Have you sought treatment? Have you called OSHA? Have you called wage or workers' comp? You know, what kind of treatment are you accessing? You know, what are the problems you're having? What are the treatment you're accessing? Also out of this, we've included some items on the census of returning migrants. So the Mexican Census Department has a survey they do of all the migrants that are returning to Mexico. And one thing they're interested in finding out is how many are returning with injuries that they've sustained at work here in the United States. And so we helped them develop 4 or 5 items that will try and get at that so they can then begin to calculate some of the cost to the Mexican government of people working here and not receiving treatment or payments through workers' comp, et cetera. And then there are plans to expand these studies to other consulates. And so there's an idea that we'll maybe be able to do this survey and a sampling of consulates across the whole country. And then information dissemination is another project we're doing. It's a pilot study where basically we'll be developing and testing occupational health materials at different levels of engagement. So as I mentioned, you know, some consulates all you can do is hang a poster, and others you can actually train a full-time employee. So what we want to do is develop a family of products from posters, brochures, you know, spots on closed circuit TV to actual training for the health promoters in the consulates to really promote occupational safety and health so that at the end of the day, all of the consulate would be able to implement at least something on occupational health across the country. The idea would be to create, would also be to use this, currently we're developing materials that they're not finished yet, but we're moving on it. And the idea would be that not only could this be done in the Mexican consulates, but because there'd be such a range of products, you could do it in nonprofit organizations with consulates of different countries, et cetera. And the whole premise of this is really how do we begin to increase the profile or the interest in occupational health within the Mexican government. Right. And finally, access to resources. While education is important to folks and awareness is important, really there's so many barriers that people face to actually getting treatment or filing a workers' comp complaint or accessing OSHA that if you can, given the fact that they have lawyers on staff and full-time people there, how can we facilitate this awareness raising with the education materials and then on site be able to get people to facilitate them accessing the resources that they're entitled to. So, you know, if we can put on the video screen, hey, if you've been injured at work or if you have a concern at work, you know, just go two doors down and talk to their lawyers in the protection department and then maybe they can help you file an OSHA complaint or contact OSHA or file a workers' comp complaint, et cetera. So I think the key is going beyond just education, but trying to harness, if at all possible, the resources and the infrastructure the councils have to help facilitate and walk people through that and get them the access to the resources that they need. And I know OSHA's been doing a lot of collaborations on, I think regionally, with different consulates, signing memos of understanding and agreements to try and help that happen. And one of the things Rosie mentioned in the meeting that we had in Houston is trying to also work on how we're going to get NIOSH, OSHA protection, and the health promoters kind of communicating better and working better together so that we can begin to look towards a national level of this. And then simply next steps, one, to finish the pilot projects, the pilot project I mentioned. We're looking at just trying to document and getting a sense of what's actually going on in the Mexican consulates with occupational health because we don't necessarily know everything that they're doing. Also, what are all the efforts that the different U.S. government agencies are doing through the Mexican consulates? As I mentioned, increased dialogue between the agencies binationally and increased collaborations with the Mexican consulates, as I mentioned, and the institutions here, other consulates in other countries. And then also involving community, as we get this established, then starting to involve also the community-based organizations who promote occupational health and work with immigrants in on this. And that's it. Thank you. Hopefully it was on time.